But it's got a dragon in it.
And the dragon talks.
And the dragon talks. Other than that, you know, maybe there may be some value in it. And he has transcribed it all, and he's going to bring it up to Bede. His hosts, who can't read, they've been guarding these documents for 200 years because they were told to. They let this guy read them, but they won't let him have them, but they let him copy them. They say, so what are you going to tell the Venerable Bede? He says, I found them fascinating. He says, but I believe, to some extent, they're fairy tales. And that night at dinner, the night before he's supposed to leave, and there's this funny-looking thing on his plate. And it turns out it's a dragon's claw. And it's about, you know, 12 inches long. And so he says, what is this? Obviously he can't eat it. What is this? And the guy says, food for thought. Well, when he realizes what it is, it's the dragon's claw. All of a sudden, the dragon is part of the story. Wait a minute. Now he's really excited. He can't wait to get up to see Bede, and off he goes. Yeah. Now, this is taking 200 years after the principal story, okay? He gets up there. Bede is dead. Nobody knew he was sent south to research this stuff. Bede sent him directly from where he was on his way back, right? Yes. And the guy who accepts him looks at the documents, reads what it says, sees the devil's claw, and locks him up. Seizes the documents as heresy, or friends of Bede, who believe that Bede sent them. They help him escape. But now he's got to get to the south and protect the documents before these fanatics come after them. And he's being hunted, so you now have the fugitive on top of King Arthur.
There's a new book out. An expanded edition of Odd Tales and Wonders.
Yeah.
Confessing that I wrote the afterword or provided the afterword interview with you on it. But this was a book that was put out a few years ago in a smaller, thinner edition.
Right.
So there's a new book product out as part of your empire. Tell me about the concept of this book, why you developed it, expanded. Okay. I know there's more visuals. Yeah. I've endorsed the book. I did an afterward interview with you explaining some of this book, but it is, again, a focus on your 1964 to 74 life. This is an important thing because it's current and it's music and it's your rock and roll stuff and it's this life that you had.
Yeah, and it's getting 4-star reviews. The original one was called Travis of the Pike's Odd Tales and Wonders, A Decade of Performance. And that's what it was about. And that's because people were interested in what I did when I was in my 20s and 30s when I was doing rock and roll.
Right.
Okay. In between that book that I released in 2013 and the book I released last year in 2018, I received the film that I got transferred and put up on YouTube. My father's estate was settled, and a whole bunch of photos from the making of Feeling Good suddenly arrived to me. I hadn't ever seen any of these things. So I had pages of great production stills and all these other things that had come up in those in-between 5 years, and even people I'd gotten back in touch with that I hadn't talked to in years and years. And so they informed the new book. So what were you doing? What was the family? What was this about? Who did you meet in Hollywood? Who did you talk to? And that's where that stuff came into the book. Okay. And so the reason for the book is that the first book, as good as it was, and it was okay, this book says Travis Edward Pike was a player. He had a lot of things going on. That movie, that's the real thing. That was a major motion picture that did not succeed. And the reason it didn't succeed is that my father lost faith in it because Demo Derby, he made it without me, but he did use my song for his title song. Mm-hmm. Demo Derby was a smash hit, played all across the country with A Hard Day's Night. His next picture, it was the first feature-length widescreen color movie starring me and 8 of my songs. Actually, 10 of my songs, but only 8 of them that I performed. And the only other song that was in the show, well, there were two. One was a thing called Ride the Rainbow by an English folk singer. And the other one was Gershwin's
Why
Summertime.
The expanded edition? I know we found new visuals and lyrics of songs being printed, but
it's people like you, people, these other interviewers who talk to me,
yeah,
I learned from them. Remember, the first book I just wrote.
We understand.
Okay, but when you guys keep asking me all these questions, I see what it is you want.
Well, right? The thing is, it's a world that is rarely documented because it's Massachusetts and Boston and a little bit of Pomona. It's not Hollywood, London, New York, Berkeley, San Francisco.
But it was also Germany.
Right. So it's kind of a refreshing, undocumented world. And luckily, you're not telling this posthumously. You put in 10 years playing clubs.
Oh, yeah.
You did the work.
In the first book, I was doing it from memory.
Right.
And my wife's scrapbook to some extent.
Yes.
Now,
the clippings and all that kind of stuff.
But because of all these things that suddenly after the publication of that book came to me to inform it even bigger and better, then Judy actually got into some forensic research, which is to say she went back to the checkbooks because she keeps them. She went back to the Travis Pikes Tea Party checkbook. She went back to the old contracts with the various universities and stuff. And suddenly I had absolute dates. And some of my memories in the first book, I thought that we came to California, for example, and we worked for a year or two, and I just gave up on it. Well, the truth is, we came to California, we had a break in a new guy, and we didn't have a single job for something like 5 months because he was so slow learning everything, which I think was actually a deliberate ploy.
Were you paying for the rehearsal hall?
No, okay. Not this time. But nobody was making any money. We weren't working. We didn't get our first gig. We arrived here, I think, in August. Everybody was here in August, so I was here sooner. They found the guy sooner. But our first gig, it was a horrible gig, and it was at the end of December. Our first real gig was at the Posh starting in January.
That was in Pomona or Claremont or something?
Yeah. Now, the key to that is, consider, August, September, October, November, no money. Trying to break in a new guy, no gigs, no work. Finally, we get into the Groovy, new club, no clientele, nothing.
Uh-huh.
And we're supposed to make it fly, and we're going to get paid from what they sell in hot dogs, hamburgers, and beer. When the whole evening, you might have had as many as 15 or 20 people in there. At the end of the week, and everybody in the band is having their breakfast, lunch, and dinner there. There's no money for anybody. The only guy who went home with money was me, because I didn't do all that stuff.
Remember one thing, you're not Zelig. You've got your own journey.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the reasons why I enjoy being the guy discussing these things every couple of years is I have seen outreach, I've seen growth, I've seen reissues, I've seen expanded editions. But to me, I like when record labels call you to reissue something that I have written about in a book. Uh-huh. I like seeing these psychic and audio rewards.
Yeah.
They're not on MTV. They're not shipping millions of units. But the thing is, the music, your concerns about love, let's call it planetary concerns, still resonate.
I just heard from Rob Bailey, who's a DJ in the UK, and he had acquired the rights to the old song, that the only record that Travis Pike's Tea Party ever released.
Right.
And didn't release it. And in between, the stuff from Feeling Good came out and did very well. It was cited as the number three single in Shindig magazine in the UK. Now, why he didn't cash in on it then, I don't know, and it doesn't
matter.
But
now,
March 3rd, If I Didn't Love You, Girl, which had previously been on three compilation albums. We only made one record, when it had been on three compilation albums.
Harvey Kubernick rests his case. This has not been a vanity venture.
No.
We are seeing results.
Yep. March 3rd.
You have been listening to the Otherworld Cottage Industries, Harvey Kubernick, Travis Edward Pike Interview, Part 7. Listeners and bloggers are encouraged to link to or download and share this interview with their friends and visitors with the understanding that this recording remains the property of Otherworld Cottage Industries, and its content, including this permission notice, may not be edited, transcribed, or altered in any way. Your cooperation allows us to share this internet content free. Thank you.